However, all these discoveries are nothing, to my mind, compared with that which I was able to make in the presence of the acting manager, in the manager's office, within a couple of inches from the desk chair, which consisted of a trapdoor the width of a board in the flooring and the length of a man's forearm and no longer. A trapdoor that falls back like the lid of a box. A trapdoor through which I can see a hand come and dexterously fumble at the pocket of a swallowtail coat. That is the way the 40,000 francs went. And that also is the way by which, through some trick or other, they were returned. Speaking about this to the Persian, I said, "So we may take it, as the 40,000 francs were returned, that Eric was simply amusing himself with that memorandum book of his." "Don't you believe it," he replied. "Eric wanted money. Thinking himself without the pale of humanity, he was restrained by no scruples, and he employed his extraordinary gifts of dexterity and imagination, which he had received by way of compensation for his extraordinary ugliness, to prey upon his fellow men. His reason for restoring the 40,000 francs of his own accord was that he no longer wanted it. He had relinquished his marriage with Christine Daae. He had relinquished everything above the surface of the earth." According to the Persian's account, Eric was born in a small town not far from Rouen. He was the son of a master mason. He ran away at an early age from his father's house, where his ugliness was a subject of horror and terror to his parents. For a time, he frequented the fairs, where a showman exhibited him as the living corpse. He seems to have crossed the whole of Europe from fair to fair and to have completed his strange education as an artist and magician at the very fountainhead of art and magic among the gypsies. A period of Eric's life remained quite obscure. He was seen at the fair of Nizhny Novgorod, where he displayed himself in all his hideous glory. He already sang, as nobody on this earth had ever sung before. He practiced ventriloquism and gave displays of legerdemain so extraordinary that the caravans returning to Asia talked about it during the whole length of their journey. In this way, his reputation penetrated the walls of the palace at Mazenderan, where the little sultana, the favorite of the Shah and Shah, was boring herself to death. A dealer in furs, returning to Samarkand from Nizhny Novgorod, told of the marvels which he had seen performed in Eric's tent. The trader was summoned to the palace, and the daroga of Mazenderan was told to question him. Next, the daroga was instructed to go and find Eric. He brought him to Persia, where for some months Eric's will was law. He was guilty of not a few horrors, for he seemed not to know the difference between good and evil. He took part calmly in a number of political assassinations, and he turned his diabolical inventive powers against the Emir of Afghanistan, who was at war with the Persian Empire. The Shah took a liking to him. This was the time of the rosy hours of Mazenderan, of which the daroga's narrative has given us a glimpse. Eric had very original ideas on the subject of architecture and thought out a palace much as a conjurer contrives a trick casket. The Shah ordered him to construct an edifice of this kind. Eric did so, and the building appears to have been so ingenious that His Majesty was able to move about in it unseen and to disappear without a possibility of the tricks being discovered.